Kildare Focus. And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to Kildare Focus with myself, Owen Beattie. We're here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Lots to get through on the programme, including we'll be announcing the details of the 5 finalists of KFM's Irish Music Month competition. Paul Power, programme director here at KFM, will join us in around about 10 minutes' time. We'll be talking to Michelle O'Brien, the chief executive of the Irish Osteoporosis Society, about osteoporosis and ways to prevent it. Cathy Maher, chair of the Irish Pharmacy Union's Pharmacy Contractors Committee. Almost half of people feel the pandemic has had a negative impact on their health. That's according to new research. And it's World Habitat Day, managing hedgerows and protecting habitats. We'll be talking to the Irish Farmers Association on that. As always, get in touch with us, 0833 97 97 97 on the text and WhatsApp. You can call us on 045 898 99 or the email address is studio@kfmradio.com. KFM. First of all, this afternoon, though, I'm joined by Breda Dooley, Senior Manager with Matrix Recruitment. Good afternoon, Breda.
Good afternoon, Owen. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. New survey finding that more than half of Irish workers are concerned that choosing remote working will create inequality. Tell us a little bit more about the research.
Yes, this is Matrix Recruitment's fourth year running this workplace equality survey. And what is the main findings was that somebody choosing to work remotely, there will be inequality around this, they feel. 38% are worried that they'll be asked to take a pay cut because they've been asked to work remotely. And also 60% of them fear that their career progression will slow down. The fear is that out of sight, out of mind, that they'll be forgotten about during meetings if they choose to work remotely. Or 48% of them feel that view that their boss will consider the decision to work remotely a reflection on their commitment to the company. And again, that they're concerned that the opportunities for progression won't be the same if they work remotely, along with the opportunities to take part in projects as well. They once they're not in the office, they can't be seen, so they feel that they won't have the same opportunities as their colleagues who decide to go back into the office.
Yeah, and as we know, over the last couple of months, and particularly over the last few weeks, people have started to return to the office now, and some companies and businesses opting for a hybrid model where you do maybe 2 days at home and then 3 days in the office. What about the findings that you had in terms of fitting 5 days into 4? A lot of people saying that that would be hugely complex, and yourself saying that as well.
This is actually very, very interesting. 85% of the people surveyed on this are in favour of a 4-day working week. Their view is that they will have a better work-life balance. We're hearing a lot more about health and well-being, and also that they can fit 5 days into 4, whereas the other side, 15%, are not in favour of working 4 days, 5 days and 4 days. They feel that it'd be a lot more pressurised environment, and that it would be result in longer working days. There's a lot, I suppose, to be figured out here as well. It's not going to suit every industry or every type of job. I know the government are currently, are funding this to see is it an option as well of doing 5 days and 4s. It's again, parents is not going to suit this. It's same with somebody maybe that's into sports or studying in the evenings. Working longer days mightn't suit them, along with you have to consider then maybe people that are doing part-time work. Will it suit them? Is it fair to them to be only getting paid if they work 3 days and getting paid for 3 days, and their colleague beside them who choose to work 4 days and is getting paid for 5? So there's a lot more work needs to be done before this can be put in place. I think we'll hear a lot more about it, because it was such a high percentage of the people surveyed, 85% want, 4-day working week.
It's an interesting debate, really, Breda, and I suppose really the pandemic has brought this to the fore, not only about working 4 days a week, but also the model of remote working. If you were to talk to people in various different industries and ask them the question 2 years ago, would they be able to carry out their work at home? I'm sure the majority of them would say no. So our approach to work has changed quite significantly over the last while.
Yes, it has. We were all drawn into this, when the pandemic started, we were all drawn into this kind of work you know, remotely. It would have, I was hearing about it myself in Matrix Recruitment, where I had, you know, candidates coming asking, you know, I'd like to be able to maybe be in the office 4 days and work remotely. And we were approaching it with potential employers. And it was what we were finding, that you'd have to be in the company for a number of years before you get the option maybe of doing maybe 1 or 2 days at home. But it is definitely something that's here to stay, this hybrid work. I think it's proven that people can work remotely.
And then finally, on your research, Breida, more expected of working mothers during the pandemic. And as we mentioned from the outset, this is a workplace equality survey. 36% of respondents saying that the pandemic had created workplace inequality between those with and those without children. How come?
Yes, the view was that the view from the respondents was that 38% of the people felt that those without children, there was a lot more expected of them. Maybe they were given a heavier workload. While on the other side, the flip side of it, that people with kids, there was no kind of, I suppose, leeway given to them, the fact that they were doing childcare and homeschooling, and they were still expected to do a full-time job and juggle everything as well.
Well, Breida Dooley, Senior Manager with Matrix Recruitment, on that research, more than half of Irish workers are concerned that choosing remote working will create inequality, according to that survey. You can see more details on thematrix.ie and also on their website. Breida Dooley, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Owen.
And we're focusing on Irish music for the next couple of minutes, because I'm joined in studio now by Paul Power, Programme Director here at KFM. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. How are you? Monday. Good. Here we are again.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, we have been running our Irish Music Month competition, because obviously, now that we've ticked into October, it is officially Irish Music Month. But we've been accepting entries from local artists from all around County Kildare, and we've picked five finalists, which we'll announce very shortly. But the response that we got has been fantastic.
It was huge, and we were impressed with it. And you always kind of feel when you say stuff like the standard is really high, that you're being patronising, but we're not. I mean, it was. The standard was incredibly high. And it was really, really difficult to whittle them down to five. I mean, we listened to them over days and days, and then we listened to them again, and we got together and we all had our own lists, and democratically, that's how it was done at the end of the day. I mean, you were in on the judging panel as well, and what we all did on the judging panel was we all did our list, and whoever came out with the most votes went through into the top five, as it should be. Yeah. And a very impressive top five it is as well, going through to the final, I have to say. Each of them in their own right, very, very talented individuals, very, very talented people. And I think we'll be sending a fairly strong submission into the grand final, which is in November.
So just remind us then briefly how this whole competition works for somebody who might be new to it. We had to essentially pick out five finalists from all these entries that came in, and over the course now of October, we'll be interviewing them, and one goes on to the grand final. Is that
correct? Yeah, over the course of October, we'll be interviewing all five of them. We'll get some music from all five of them. And then this time around, we're going to send it out to an independent panel of judges. We've got some independent judges lined up who are not connected with the radio station, and indeed not even connected with Kildare. They're basically going to do a blind judging, because what we're going to do is we're going to send them out to them, number them 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and ask them to judge them on the basis of what they hear and what they hear only. We'll also have a vote here on KFM, but all of us putting our collective heads together will only have one vote.
Yeah.
And then eventually we'll come up with a winner out of all five of them, who'll go through to the national final. Of course, there will be 25 other finalists in there as well. It's going to be a live event. It'll be streamed. There'll be a live element to it as well. And someone at the end of it all will win €5,000, and of course get all the exposure that goes with us. Hot Press are in on this as well, so there's going to be a lot of exposure for artists through Hot Press, as well as here on KFM and on other radio stations right across the country.
And I'm sure people will notice as well that we're playing a lot more Irish music here on KFM, supporting Irish music. But let's reveal then our five five finalists, and worth pointing out as well that the entries that we got were spread right across the county from the very north to the very south, but we've picked out our five finalists then.
These are in no particular order, and of course from your stint on the Irish music scene you'll be familiar with a lot of these already. So first is Jess Young. Now Jess is from Moon in County Kildare originally. She's based in London these days, and she released her first single prior to lockdown in 2020. And as I say, she's extremely talented. How would you describe her?
I think she has a great, great sound. I think it's very kind of pop, but a very unique voice, definitely. I know that she's moved over to the UK, but just from talking to her and interviewing her in the past, she has friends and family still living down around Moon and Timalyn, and really does have fond memories of it as well. So her music is brilliant and a very, very strong entry, definitely.
Yeah, she'll be delighted. Her family and friends will be delighted as well. Next up is Gemma Cox. Now, Gemma is from Nace, and I don't like to make comparisons, but it says it on her, some of her own stuff that was sent through, that she has been compared to the likes of Lily Allen and Anne-Marie.
Yeah, and we play one of her songs, Whale on My Shoulder. I think she's a relatively new musician to the Irish music industry. She's only brought out one or two singles, but a lot more to come from her, I think, as well.
Indeed, yeah. Somebody else then who is in a band, a relatively new band to my knowledge, but they've obviously got their stuff together even at this early stage. They're an indie pop band from Newbridge, and they're called Riders Blue. And these kind of came out of the blue to me because I hadn't heard of them before. And I have to say that they blew me away as soon as I heard them as well. Lots of little puns going in there as well. But very talented bunch of people.
Yeah, I hadn't heard much about them either. I think Kieran Plunkett interviewed them on Kildare Focus a couple of years ago when they were playing a local festival or something like that. But I know just from reading some of their notes that they sent in, they've been working very, very hard together behind the scenes and getting music together, and they feel as though now they're ready to take the next step. So that's Riders Blue, definitely one to keep an eye out for.
Yeah. Next up is a name that will be familiar to some people in County Kildare, quite a few people I'm sure, and that's Megan O'Neill. And Megan is from Ballymore Eustace. Now Megan's kind of got a blend of country, folk and American in what she does predominantly, although I believe she's been working on some new material which is going to move more towards the mainstream and alternative, kind of a poppy kind of a sound for 2022. So I'll be looking forward to hearing that. Now certainly the submissions that she sent us in so far are in what we'd expect to hear from Megan, which is the Americana country kind of folk type of vibe, and again very, very strong singer.
Yeah, from Ballymore Eustace. She does a lot of work as well with Mark Kaplis, who's a guy from Wicklow around the Baltinglass area, and they have a show coming up actually in the Mo Theatre, which I believe is sold out towards the end of October. So
spent
a lot of
some time in Nashville as well, didn't she? At one stage, yeah.
So, I know Liam featured her on the K Country programme as well. So she's a very diverse kind of sound between country and now moving into that pop genre. And then last, but by no means least,
Shiv, S-H-I-V, Siobhan McLean. Known by the pseudonym, if you like, of Shiv. Siobhan's a Zimbabwean Irish singer, songwriter and producer from Athy. R&B, soul, really, really sort of sweet sound and stuff from Shiv. And I think, again, it's going to be a heck of a final, like, between all five of them. It really is.
So they are our five finalists here on KFM, our local hero search: Megan O'Neill, Jess Young, Shiv, Riders Blue and Gemma Cox. And throughout the course of the month of October, you'll be hearing a lot more of their music on KFM, and indeed we'll be interviewing them as well on the Irish music scene.
And just incidentally, for anybody else who did enter and who haven't gotten through to this stage, we're going to be featuring a lot of the music that hasn't actually made it into the final over the month as well. So there will be airplay for, you know, some of the artists who actually didn't get through. And like, I thought all of them were absolutely brilliant, but obviously there could only be five. We couldn't put them all through. And again, don't want to sound condescending or patronising or anything, but sort of nobody should feel down and out about it for any reason, because just because they haven't made it into the last five. I think they were all fabulous.
That's Paul Power, Programme Director here at KFM, announcing those five finalists of our competition. Coming up after the break, we'll be heading to the Irish Osteoporosis Society to get details from Chief Executive Michelle O'Brien, and we've more music coming up as well.
Kildare Focus with Owen Beattie.
Well, as COVID-19 restrictions ease, it's understandable that people could experience varying degrees of anxiety. Remember that it's perfectly okay to feel anxious. We all need to adjust in our own time. If anxiety is becoming a problem, don't wait to get support. If anxiety is recurring and impacting on your life, reach out for a little more support. And there's a lot of trusted mental health information, help and support out there. Everything from online self-help to confidential helplines. Whatever you're going through, you can always find trusted information on mental health supports and services at yourmentalhealth.ie or through the 24-hour Your Mental Health information line on 1800 111 888.
The Mental Health Minute from KFM and the HSE.
Okay, we need to talk about something, okay? We need to talk about being okay, because as restrictions begin to ease, it's okay to feel a bit anxious. You want to see your friends, you just don't want to touch any of them, and that's okay. Just tell them they're your friends, they'll get it. Everyone gets it, and it's okay to take things slowly. We're all still learning to live with COVID, and everyone's experience of that will be different. In fact, your experience might be permanently different. It's okay if you decide to maybe not go back to your exact old routine. Take time to readjust and be patient with yourself and others you care about, because it's always okay to ask for help. Whatever you're going through, you can always find trusted information on a range of mental health supports and services at yourmentalhealth.ie or through the 24-hour Your Mental Health information line on 1800 111 888. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Great message there, and very, very important to take note of it as well. And we'll be giving out those details later on in the programme. You can keep your messages coming into us 0833 97 97 97 on the text and the WhatsApp. Also email studio@kfmradio.com. Moving on though, and joining me on the line now is Chief Executive of the Irish Osteoporosis Society, Michelle O'Brien. Good afternoon, Michelle.
Good afternoon, Owen.
And I suppose, as the name suggests, the Osteoporosis Society, we'll be talking about osteoporosis. So, first of all, just explain to us what exactly it is.
Osteoporosis is the commonest bone disease worldwide, and it's a disease that is called a silent disease because there are no signs and symptoms before someone breaks a bone, and it makes the inside of a person's bones very fragile, but on the outside they look perfectly fine.
That was actually going to be my next question, because I remember doing home economics in school, and around fifth or sixth year you talk about these, you know, bone deficiency diseases from not getting enough calcium, and I was going to ask you what's the signs and symptoms, but it's the silent disease, so maybe people mightn't even know that they're developing osteoporosis.
Exactly. There are no signs and symptoms warning someone. There are signs and symptoms of undiagnosed osteoporosis, however.
So what is the first step then in diagnosing it, or how would people know that they may have developed osteoporosis?
The quickest way is probably to go on our website and check to see do they have any risk factors for bone loss, because most people think that it only affects older women and the menopause is the only cause. However, more men pass away from osteoporosis than actually develop prostate cancer.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite shocking, isn't it?
So the risk factors then, just take me through some of those risk factors if you could.
Yeah, one of the strongest is genetics, if there's a family history, especially of a broken hip. And I'm just going to point this out, because a lot of people don't realise that the word fracture actually means broken hip. So if you've been told you have a fracture, you actually have a broken bone. So genetics, 80% of your bone is genetic. So if either of your parents or grandparents broke bones, or were actually diagnosed, you're at higher risk. But the saddest part is only 19% of people are diagnosed. But there are a whole load of medications and treatments. One of the ones I find most upsetting is those who've dealt with cancer. Chemotherapy, radiation, Arimidex for breast cancer, and certain treatments for prostate cancer, they all cause significant bone loss, and all cancer patients should be treated preventively. But one of the other biggest ones, especially in Ireland, is low vitamin D levels.
And we've heard a lot about that over the last year and a half or so, and the fact that we don't get enough sunlight here in Ireland would mean that I'm sure you'd advise perhaps taking a vitamin D supplement.
if you can't get it through food, and that's the thing, the reason you've heard a lot, we were actually one of the first organisations to get the, to push for people to take vitamin D, because vitamin D not only helps with bone health, but it also helps with your immune system. So regarding COVID, it gives you more protection. So that's why it has been brought up over this issue with COVID. But the issue is you can be taking vitamin D, but it's whether you're actually absorbing it. So it can be found in foods, oily fish, eggs, fortified cereals, fortified milks. And it's the only hormone that you can actually get from the sun. But unfortunately, we get very little sun.
Without generalising, Michelle, I think a lot of people will think that there's only a certain cohort of people that get affected by osteoporosis. But a question that has come in on the text as well is, what about children? Do children get it, or is it only certain older people that might develop it?
Children are at risk, but it's much lower. The children who tend to develop osteoporosis are those who are on medications that cause bone loss, have conditions that cause bone loss. Ireland has a lot of odd diseases, and this is why children who have been diagnosed with any type of condition, the parent just needs to check with the GP or consultant. It does the condition or the medication itself actually cause bone loss? But children breaking bones is not unusual because their bones aren't fully developed. But what we tell people is, look, if a child breaks a bone, they should just be screened to see, do they have any risk factors? Majority of the time, it's not bone loss, it's just they've been unlucky, but it's very important to check. And an example is if a child has asthma and they're on an inhaler that has a steroid in it. That's one of the major causes of bone loss is corticosteroids. And this is where a lot of senior citizens are on it. But if a child is on a steroid inhaler, and if they don't like to do sport, so they're not weight-bearing, because children should be weight-bearing to help build up their bone strength, to reduce the risk of developing osteoporosis.
And if somebody does develop osteoporosis, then they've gone to the doctor and they've been diagnosed, what is the next step? Is there certain things that you can do to alleviate maybe pain or slow it down?
One of the biggest myths is that it's not treatable. And what it is it is treatable. Some people can improve significantly more than others. It all depends on their causes. And there's 200 causes of bone loss. So what happens is if somebody is referred for a DEXA scan, which is the only test of the spine and hips that we recommend to diagnose osteoporosis, if that is positive, then there are certain blood tests that should be done and a questionnaire filled in to figure out why has the person lost bone in the first place. It should never, ever be assumed. And that's what tends to happen with the people who contact us. If they're female over 60, oh, it's the menopause. But if you're a male over 60, there is no such thing as a male menopause. So this is why it's finding out the causes must be found and addressed. And then the person will need to go on an osteoporosis medication, take the daily amounts of calcium and vitamin D, but preferably through food. We only recommend supplements if you can't get your daily amounts through food.
Okay, and finally, Michelle, before we let you go, as I say, you're the chief executive of the Irish Osteoporosis Society. Just remind us of the work that you do.
Basically, we're a support system for people diagnosed, people at risk, family members of those at risk. And we do assist health professionals. So if anyone has any queries, the quickest way is to go on our website. There's a significant amount of information because 81% of people will lose their independence. And this disease is treatable. It's just a matter of there's a small amount that can reverse back to normal. But majority of people, we have 90-year-olds who have significantly improved their bone strength.
Okay, as you mentioned there as well, the website is www.irishosteoporosis.ie if you want to get more details on that, irishosteoporosis.ie. And the Chief Executive of the Irish Osteoporosis Society, Michelle O'Brien. Very informative, Michelle. Many thanks for joining us on the programme this afternoon, and good afternoon to you. Now, let's move on to other research that has come out over the last while, and this is a new survey, kind of ties in what we were talking about there with the HSE's Mental Health Minute, that, you know, as we go back to some sort of normality and restrictions begin to ease, it is understandable that people could experience varying degrees of anxiety. But new research saying that almost half of people feel as though the pandemic has had a negative impact on their health. Chair of the Irish Pharmacy Union's Pharmacy Contractors Committee is Cathy Marr, and she joins us now. Good afternoon, Cathy.
Good afternoon.
So when we talk about a negative impact here on people's health, are we talking about health in general or mental health?
It's been a mix of both, and we had Behaviour and Attitudes Independent Market Research survey more than 1,000 people, and the results between 2020 and 2021 and how the pandemic has affected the nation has been quite stark. And I suppose as we look at the final easing of restrictions about to come upon us, it's really important not to forget that this pandemic will have a long-reaching impact, very profound and difficult experiences that society have had over the past kind of 18 months. And we have to remember that those impacts will be felt for years to come. This research has shown that COVID-19 has had an impact on all of us far beyond those that have contracted the virus.
And as you say, it is a mixture of mental health and physical health. A lot of people saying that they have significant worries about, you know, going back out into society. And when you see people without masks, or, you know, when the 1 meter distance rule has been reduced, that kind of takes a bit of getting used to. And even, you know, myself, I was at an outdoor gig the other day. We were quite close together, and you're thinking, it's just, it feels so alien, even though 18 months, 2 years ago, it was the norm.
It feels unusual, absolutely. I had a similar experience. But with the research has been really interesting. It actually backs up that what we see in community pharmacy every day and have seen for about 18 months. You might recall back even in May 2020 or June, July, as we began to ease out of lockdown number one, the level of anxiety that we noticed within Irish patients was quite palpable, much more so than when they had been in lockdown. And this is it's very reflective in this survey. But what we see with the differences in the survey were a lot of people through the initial lockdowns, the initial phase of the pandemic, really felt that they were eating too much, that they were gaining weight. And we've noticed that that percentage, that has come down by about 7%. So people have taken hold on that. But converse to that, we see that people were experiencing, maybe about 19% of people maybe were experiencing anxiety and depression. But 2021, 12 months on, that has increased to 25%. What we're noticing is, whilst the disease itself disproportionately affected older people, and we saw that over the past 18 months, the negative impact of lockdowns and the societal impact seems to have been felt much more profoundly by younger people, and that's similar to what we're hearing today in the mental health priorities. Those aged over 65 were 3 times more likely to say that they, other than contracting the virus, that the virus of the lockdowns have had no impact on them, compared to those adults who are under 24 who've been severely impacted.
And what about, do you have figures for a gender breakdown then, if it's impacting women more than men or vice versa?
The impact in terms of gender was marginal. It wasn't adversely so, though we did see, and you would hear very many anecdotal reports of women maybe balancing the childcare and working from home and homeschooling and that. What we did see, the starkest result within the survey was the age and the age disparity, and where we're seeing a quarter of all 16 to 25-year-olds reporting experience significant worries quite often, and they felt that they had a poor control of their mental health and emotions, and that had increased 3-4% on last year alone. So you can see that it's really quite stark. A quarter of all women surveyed felt that they felt that their mental health was in control, but that was compared to a third of all men. So whether it was COVID related or not, we can see that the impact on younger people has been huge.
And finally then, Cathy, this obviously has a knock-on effect, and just an article that I see in the Irish Examiner picking up on this, almost 4.7 million prescriptions for antidepressants, mood stabilisers and tranquilisers were dispensed between January and August. That's 15% more than the same period in 2019. So there's a 15% mm-hmm. increase in prescriptions, so that obviously would tie in with what you're saying and what the research found.
Absolutely, and the company that mines that data, Health Market Research, gets real-time information from pharmacies around the country, so we can see what is actually being dispensed. And we saw that as the pandemic hit, there was a spike of those medicines, antidepressants, hypnotics or sleeping tablets and anti-anxiety medicines in March 2020, a huge spike. And we attributed some of that to people maybe stocking up because we didn't know how long we were going to experience the first lockdown for. That increase in dispensing or maintained month on month for the duration of the pandemic. There were other spikes that we saw. So as I said, that July spike, similarly as we saw in practice, people having a real spike in anxiety around July as we exited the first lockdown, no one knew what to expect. And then we saw it again in September 2020, a spike again because children were returning to school. And we could see these ups and downs has happened throughout the pandemic. But you're right, the dispensing of these medicines has been maintained higher than the year before.
Well, Cathy Maher, the Irish Pharmacy Union's Pharmacy Contractor Committee Chair, thanks for joining us on the programme this afternoon with the findings of that research. And just to give out the details as well, if you are suffering anxiety or depression, make sure to reach out, as we said to you. You can text Samaritans 116123, Samaritans Newbridge and Kildare, number 045 435 299. Also, Mental Health Support Text Service 50808, and of course Pieta House and various other organisations as well. If you go on to their websites, you can get more details of that. But Cathy Maher from the Irish Pharmacy Union, thanks for joining us on that information. Now, the Irish Farmers Association are advising farmers to be aware that hedges provide food and shelter and habitats for wildlife and birds throughout the winter months. This is all coming about because it's World Habitat Day, and hedgerow cutting is now permitted until the end of February. Paul O'Brien from the IFA Environment and Rural Affairs, he's the chairman there and Smart Farming's programme leader. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Very good afternoon to you, Owen, and your listeners.
So, World Habitat Day, if I can get it out, just tell me what it is exactly.
Well, I think this is one day a year, first Monday in October, where, you know, world, everybody gets together and we look at ways that we can increase habitat protection and look at really biodiversity and how we can help biodiversity in society, you know, in the countryside, and in, not only the countryside but also in towns and villages as well. But it's a very important day for biodiversity in general.
And over the last couple of months, hedgerow cutting was not permitted, but as I said there from the outset, it is now again until the end of February. So the message that you're getting out to farmers is to, I suppose, while you can do, you know, the cutting with the hedgerows, to maybe keep it to a minimal and, as we say, protect wildlife.
Well, there's a number of things there. I mean, you know, in reality, you know, road margins and roads, they have to be cut in order to provide sort of health and safety for road users as well, and visibility when you're pulling out of either fields, farms, houses. But really where we are, you know, we have to understand that in Ireland, we have a unique landscape in the sense that about 7% of all of our land area is made up of hedgerows. So it's a massive part of biodiversity, but it's also a massive carbon sink as well. So really what we're suggesting to farmers, and, you know, I would encourage them to go off and, you know, look, get other expert advice, look at Chogas websites and look at Chogas videos, and really just say, okay, then look, we do understand that we have to cut hedges, but we also have to understand that this is an essential piece of farming. It's an essential piece that it allows, you know, nature to flourish, and, you know, we need to be looking at this in biodiversity measures in the future as well. And I think this is a good story that, you know, farmers can engage in. If you're going to do some hedge cutting, do it, but do it in a sustainable way that allows the benefits for stop-proof fencing, allows the benefits kind of for, I suppose, the extreme wind and rain, you know, to give animals a shelter, but also understand that, you know, we do have a role to play when it comes to biodiversity.
Is it more so then to kind of, if there is a hedgerow, to trim it back rather than to take the whole hedgerow out completely?
Well, there's not much taking hedgerows out completely now. Like, we're not allowed to do that now under kind of our basic payment applications. If you take down a hedgerow, you have to reinstall a new hedgerow prior to you taking out an existing hedgerow. But the trimming back, what we're saying is that recognise what you're doing, allow trees along that hedgerow maybe to be able to be established, and, you know, because this is all a part of, you know, the carbon sink as well. we are trying to encourage farmers, I suppose, not only in the IFA, but throughout the whole of, the agricultural system, we're trying to kind of, you know, have our carbon sequestration recognised as well. So this is important for, this is a win-win for everybody. This is a win-win for biodiversity, but ultimately, you know, farmers will have the ability to have their carbon sequestration quantified in the future and for that maybe to be recognised.
And finally, Paul, would there be an argument as well for farmers to plant new hedgerows going forward?
Well, aren't there things such as the old REP schemes and GLOS schemes, environmental schemes that go back from to the mid-90s, a considerable amount of hedgerows was established in the country. And, you know, the question is there. I would like to see in a new environmental scheme that's proposed from 2023. So, yes, it would be. You know, I mean, I do think that there is an opportunity there for more hedgerows to be planted. They're expensive, and there has to be recognition that, you know, fencing has to be done on both sides. The cost of establishment is there. You're taking land out of production. So all of this has to be recognised. But I do think it's a win-win. So we've planted a lot of hedgerows over the last periods there between the 90s and into the mid part of the last decade. 20 years, there was lots of hedgerows planted, and they're starting to mature now and starting to look very good in the landscape.
Well, on that note, Paul O'Brien, IFA Environment and Rural Affairs Chairman and Smart Farming's Programme Leader, many thanks for joining us on the programme this afternoon, and thanks for your time today. World Habitat Day, managing hedgerows and protecting habitats. You can get more information on the IFA website.